This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 511, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 511. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi-yo.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. I don't know if Skype will cancel out our harmony, but if you didn't hear it, it was lovely. We are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a huge stack of comic books. And one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and we will talk about that book and other books, and there'll be books like, oh, I didn't read that. I should have probably read that because there were so many comic books. And some other stuff. Maybe we'll read some mail. You never know what you're going to get. That's not true. It's pretty much always exactly the same. But here's your spoiler warning. That's the secret of the show, you know. That's how we get to do it. It's always the same. Nothing ever changes. Nothing ever changes. There are going to be spoilers. It's a review show. Get with it. You know what's up. I don't hear any. We don't hear people complaining about that anymore. It's not a thing. Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and it was a tough one, tough week. The pick was easy, but the week was tough. Before getting the pick itself, I mean, these are the books that came out this week that I read: Twilight Children, Batman, Captain America, White Rebels, War Stories, Thor, Secret Wars, Birthright, Airboy, Southern Bastards, The Goddamn. These are like a collection of some of the best books being out right now. So I had a pretty easy decision, though. It was Airboy number 4. That means all four episodes, all four issues of this miniseries were pick of the week.
Has that ever happened before? Do we know?
I don't think it has.
An entire series get every issue as pick of the week. That's amazing.
Usually there's one of them on an off week. And if it has, it was never a consensus.
Yes, and totally agreed this week.
So this week, these four issues. So each one of us picked it one time, and I picked the first issue.
Yeah,
you guys picked the middle ones and the last issue. This was easy pick. I mean, I had a lot of great books. It was like Murderer's Row this week. I had a really great time reading comics. Every time I read a book, it was another great issue. But Airboy is something really special, and I realize it's not necessarily what everybody wants to read. But what I thought of this week was, you know how we talked when minimum wage came out about how
the market has sort of moved on from the Harvey Pekar, R. Crumb style indie books that were very sort of self-examining, at least in terms of it being a mainstream thing. You know, those books, even though I was a kid, I didn't read them, and they weren't as popular as, say, Spider-Man, you still knew they existed, whereas I think those books are being made now, you just don't know about them anymore.
Yeah, it's harder. There's a lot more input, basically.
And but this is a book being done by Image Comics, ostensibly featuring a superhero called Airboy, that is really just a searing self-examination by writer James Robinson. And each issue, he's peeled the layers back more and more. And this one just ended in a series of haymakers to the gut. I mean, we'll get to the plot in a second, but there's a point where he apologizes to his wife. He thinks he's about to die, and I was just like, Jesus. And then the whole examination of that terrible movie he made, Comic Book Villains, and how it was a mistake, it derailed his career.
That page basically covered every question I've ever had about that, because it really, we know James Robinson, at that point, we knew him, he did Starman, which was excellent, through and through. Then the next time you see me pops up, he does a not good movie, and then he wrote the screenplay for a really not good movie.
Right,
and the thing is, we've known all this stuff existed, and we've interviewed James Robinson, and I've hung out with him socially and all stuff like that. But like, these are the things you don't talk about,
right?
Yes. Because you know that they're not particularly good memories, and like, you don't want to bring. Hey, remember that movie you left comics to go direct, where you just basically condemned us all?
Rob, did I watch that with you?
No, I watched it by myself, but we watched it around the same time. But
I watched it. Then it was Patrick, my friend.
I think it was Patrick. Yeah, no, I remember watching it and talking about it, going, "Did you see this? Like, he hates us."
Yeah, but turns out he hated himself.
But we also talk a lot about how Rick Remender's books are very personal, and you can always find his worries and hopes and dreams in his stories. But I don't know if I've ever seen a writer open a vein like this in such a mainstream way. And the book's not super mainstream, but it's from a mainstream publisher, and where he's a main character in it. And I've never seen this before.
It's also placed into the context of something that is super mainstream. I mean, that's the other thing that's going on. It's packaged as Airboy, which is and that really is one of the things that sets it apart from just a, you know, straight to the camera talking about what's going on or whatever. Like, it's all in this, it's in the language of the thing that he's known for.
That's what makes this so amazing. I think this miniseries is rocketing up the list of like great miniseries.
Yeah. No, I mean, when this is all collected, this is a great, like almost to the same, you know, like meta-textual of adaptation. The movie, you know, what's that writer?
Yeah, Charlie Kaufman.
Like that level of honesty and transparency, and just like, you know, in terms of like modern, postmodern media, like this should go down as just amazing. Whether you know the truth of James Robinson or not. You know, the truth of James Robinson, like whether you know that he's writing from an honest place or not, even regardless, as a story, it just stands up really solidly.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say this. Here we go. This is a great piece of literature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made me feel as much as anything else I've ever read in terms of autobiographical or semi-autobiographical thing. When he says, you know, like, I'm sorry, Jan, I know that, you know, Jan was his wife. And they were very happy and they broke up. And I don't know why. I don't know anything. But that's what he feels about it. And, like, I literally felt, like, the chills there. I was like, God. Like, it really felt like I was looking at something that was, A, true. And was, B, not true in terms of, you know, the World War II stuff. But the feeling behind it was absolutely true. It was 100% genuine.
The emotion was, yeah.
Yeah. And then by the end, the like I was like getting, I don't know if choked up is there, but I was definitely like tingly at the end. I was like, oh, that's like, it's a super gut punch right at the end when Greg starts to talk to him, and yeah, he lays all it out, and there's this like last spasm where James is saying, you know, like, well, he starts naming all the other writers in comics.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know, and really that's what's going on. And we're talking about James Robinson a lot, and it would be remiss to think that a large part of the greatness of this here doesn't have anything to do with Greg Hinkle, because was just some guy who couldn't handle this and wasn't just right
it could fall on its face.
Oh, this wouldn't work without the art. The art is wonderful. It captures these people as people who are recognizable without it being Photoshoppy or Tracy. It's cartooning where the characters look like the characters, but the emotion is there in everybody's face. I mean, it's not just the dialogue balloons. It's also the look on Robinson's character's face when he says these things.
Storytelling wise, I mean, there's some really fine pacing and acting in this. And I know that they were late on this. This took longer. But even so, like if it had taken 6 months more, it would have been worth it.
And the thing is, even just take aside the personal stuff. It's actually a really fun story in the background.
It is.
If you haven't been reading or you have, so the first issue of this book was about James Robinson and artist Greg Kinkle trying to figure out how to do a Airboy comic. And then Airboy showed up as a character. The second issue was them walking around modern-day San Francisco. Then they got transported back in time to Airboy's fictional time, which was World War II fighting the Nazis who have these giant robots. And it's sort of a pulpish World War II. And then the third issue was them running around Nazi Germany. And the fourth issue, they have a plan to defeat this particular or win this particular battle. And, you know, the opening scene where James Robinson and Greg Kinkle are walking around in SS uniforms and talking about how great Hugo Boss is was really funny.
It was really funny.
And then the daring blow the bridge up scene, which is sort of your classic World War II scenario, right? You got to blow the bridge before they can get the transport across, was exciting. And then, that's why I think the brilliance of this book is it's not just a searing autobiography. He manages to do it in a really entertaining way and really, I don't want to say groundbreaking, but really sort of innovative and
utterly compelling.
It makes it palatable.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily want 4 issues of him moaning about how insecure he is, but
no.
When you have it in the midst of this action story, it makes it even more impactful. And I thought that was part of the reason it's so wonderful.
And it's the kind of comic that he's also best at, which is a lot of what this examination is.
Right.
Like, so he's writing the kind of comic that he is known for and is really good at, and clearly he loves. He does great World War II stories, great superhero World War II stories. Like, he's done it lots of times over the length of his career. And then he laid this other thing in the middle of it. Can I tell you the thing that I don't know if I'm worried about, but well, it ends on a pretty, basically Greg's like, listen, I came here to work with James Robinson. When he's ready to work, you give me a call. And he walks out and James looks up. He says, Greg, wait. He blows the cocaine off the table. And then, we see the Airboy comic is shown. It's very hopeful. And then we see like a new dawn in San Francisco. And I'm like, I hope he gets his shit together.
Well, yeah. I was impressed that the ending was as uplifting, because there's a point in this book where it's like, oh God, how is this going to come about? How is this going to wrap up without somebody killing themselves? It just seems so heavy and dark and just with so much weight. And I like the optimistic, hopeful ending and I want James to turn it around. I want, because we all know the James Robinson is one of the greatest writers that we've seen in the past 20 years. And Starman is legendary and like all mm-hmm. All this great stuff. I think it's funny. I'm also know Greg and I've known Greg for a very long time. And this is probably the best speech he's ever not given in life. it's clearly James ghostwriting for what Greg might say. But Greg is great. And everything you said about his art, I echo and I agree with. But I'm glad it ended this way.
Yes,
like I didn't want to see it end.
It would have been depressing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. But like I'd feel really bad. Like if you see James on Facebook, he's pretty open about what's going on.
Yeah.
And so I'm like I really want it to work out for him. I want this to be that cathartic thing in his life that turns everything around for him. But that's not usually how real life works.
Right.
And so like that's just like because it's real. It's not there's fantasy in here, there's whatever, and it's a version of him, but there's so much truth in there that you're like, I want him to come through. I want him to realize his worth. I want him to, make better decisions about, being self-destructive or something like that.
Right.
I hope this collection comes out before Christmas, because I know people I would give this to in a heartbeat.
It's not.
Damn it.
It won't, of course not.
I think it's important to note that once James and Greg wake up from their shared hallucination of World War II, we find that they have regular sized penises. So I think it's important to note, because before it was very generous in their portrayal. Now they're regular.
But come back to reality, sort of thing, So
I will say that a few years ago, when A Tale of Sand came out, I was like, you know, Ramon Perez is like that huge new artistic voice. And like Greg Hinkle for me is that guy this year. Like out of all the art that has come out, we've been, you know, all imminent or whatever, like, but of, like the new guys that I hadn't seen before, like this is amazing. I hope he gets tons of great work going forward because he can handle stuff, obviously.
Yeah, well, his art is very specific to a type.
Well, it's funny because so Greg is used to live in San Francisco, and now he's down, I think, down in LA. And he, you know, was part of the group that, you know, hung out at Isotope along with me and other folks. And he was always a guy who could clearly see how talented he was and that he just needed something to launch it, to get out there, you know. And luckily, you know, he met up with James and was able to make this happen. And you know, so I have high hopes that he's able to convert this into a good career and you know, do something great next. He's done, if you like what he's done, you should check out, he did a Kickstarter for a graphic novel called The Rattler, which was written by Jason McNamara, who also is one of the San Francisco Isotope alum. Mm-hmm. Also I went to high school with, in a small world. But The Rattler is really, really good, so I would say check that out if you haven't.
Does he keep repeating a line, "I'm the Rattler"?
No.
Okay, that's the Grappler.
Yeah.
All right, we can keep talking about Airboy, but we have to move on.
Yes.
Airboy number four, pick of the week. All four issues are picks of the week. I guess we could probably say Airboy is probably book of the year, but...
Wow. Just bold statements being made. I love it.
So if you told me beforehand, hey, this week the team behind Scalp, Jason Aaron, Aram Guerra are back together for the Image book called The Goddamned, I would have said, well, that would definitely have been your pick of the week right there.
I thought, I was surprised.
Well, it could have very well been. I thought it was excellent, but you know, it just ran into the freight train that was Airboy. But yeah. So this was interesting. I mean, it was good, but like, it was interesting.
Well, it's
gonna make a lot of people very angry, I think.
Here's my take on it: is that I knew going into it that it would be beautiful because it's Guerra. Right, and
Guerra and Julia Briscoe, I think, also did the colors on Scalped.
Right,
or
so
in the later part.
So we knew it looked great, but when Jason Aaron originally told me about the concept, I was like, it's not really my thing. Like, I don't, but like biblical story, I don't know if I'm gonna get into it or whatever. But I read it, I liked it. I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was really, you know,
it was biblical, but like, there's different kinds of biblical.
Right.
This is Small Testament shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
if this you is, can possibly say this is grounded biblical.
Yes.
This isn't. Well, I mean, there's supernatural things. Absolutely, the main character is Cain. He can't be hurt or killed.
Yeah.
But this is a very different take on Noah than you're used to.
That's for sure.
And it also felt very kind of Northlanders-y in terms of the language.
Yeah. I thought about that immediately. Like when we get the first. Text, word balloons, and there are modern day curses and language, and it's all this. I thought, I'm like, oh, this is this again, which I'm fine with. I get it, and that's, you know, like, I'm sure in Aramaic there was some word for shit pool.
But, if it had been old biblical language, I would not have wanted to read it. So yeah, this
exactly.
is fine. Yeah. Well, my main takeaway was this
ancient Hebrew. Yeah. I can't read a thing.
I don't know what's going on at all. My main takeaway was that I'm really glad I live when I live now and not back when they were roving packs of dogs whose faces were covered in blood.
Yeah, agreed.
You'd be dead by now. Just but, for all sorts of reasons.
I'd have a problem with the shit pool.
This was good. It's basically the story of Cain who wakes up face down in a shit pool, as Ron said, and he goes and enacts some revenge on the bone boys who put him there. And that's about it.
I got to say, for a creator who is so fluent in cursing as Jason Aaron is, and there are others, Garth Ennis comes to mind or Warren Ellis, Jason Aaron seems to transition to the non-cursing work probably better than anybody else.
Yeah.
In the light and the dark of his available dialogue, I guess, mm-hmm. which is always really interesting to me because this is vile. and Southern Bastards, like, it's things are horrible, you know, and you know, then on the other side, like, he can do straight up superhero stuff, shiny, you know, Star Wars. Actually,
well, it's interesting that you mentioned him and Garth Ennis together because they both tend to work out their religious issues in comics.
Yeah
at least Garth Ennis is open about it. I assume Jason Aaron is doing it. here.
I don't know if people really have that many issues with the New Testament or the Old Testament at this point. I feel like it's, I feel like this is what the stories would look like if you actually put them up on screen. The dialogue is a little more
contemporary.
Yeah, contemporary is exactly the word I'm looking for.
But
I'm just saying there's certain members of my family I could not give this to.
Well,
really?
Not because of the cursing or the nudity, but because
of the religious context.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a whole world that I just don't like. Okay. But yeah, like it's just, it's completely, I cannot relate both to the context or the someone reacting to it like that, you know.
But these stories are totally like blood and guts. You know, Cain is the first murderer. I mean, that's what he is. So there's not really another way to portray this that I don't even feel like this is, people don't idolize him. Like it's not like this is.
No, but they do Noah.
Yeah.
And Noah is a slave trading.
Which is probably more realistic.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I'll see right there. You're. I liked the title of the book after I finished the book.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked slipping back into my Gara shoes.
Oh, totally.
At first, I don't know that I was
what
like.
What color are those Gara shoes?
Well.
What type?
They keep you out all night. That's what they do.
Are they like a moccasin? Are they
trying to remember? Well, like at first, like his work doesn't look like anybody else's, and I hadn't like seen it in a while, and like I had to get used to it again and try to remember like these are the things that I like about it, because it's kind of jarring, not necessarily in a bad way, but like once I got going with it, I was like, all right, I'm remembering how much I loved this before, and this is it in a different context.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
And can we acknowledge the best night of your life is your night with Gara?
My night with Gara. Yeah, fanboy story. I'm trying to remember his shoes. I feel like they were boots, but I don't know.
So, I just remember he just zeroed in on you and just did not leave you alone all night.
It was great. No, the best part, though, was was the next day. Like, I passed him in a hallway, and he was just like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's totally fine. I had a great – it was good.
Well, I think you even laughed, and it continued on with me and – yeah. Other people out. Anyway.
And then I came back. Like, we tagged out.
Gara's Lament, the iFanboy story.
Oh, Ron, I love
Ron, we had a bunch of new Marvel books again this week.
Yes, we did.
Continuing on our Marvel adventure. All new, comma, all different Avengers, number one.
So this is the big one. This is Wade and Kubert.
I completely missed this. I was like, that's another Avengers book. Because I'm so used to ignoring Avengers books.
This is Adam Kubert. Wade and Adam Kubert doing the new Avengers team, which is made up of new Captain America, new Thor, new Spider-Man, new Nova.
Like it's all new and all different.
Yeah. Well, except for, I guess that's Tony Stark and the Vision.
Yeah.
What if we take the ambiguity out of naming these? So I just have one question.
Yeah.
Should I go back and read this?
Sure.
Oh, there we go.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean.
There it is. No, that's all I needed. What I would have accepted was.
It really depends on your feelings right now, because as people have been listening to the show know, Ron and I are having a lot of angst about the Marvel Universe. And I think my hesitation is only in that respect. It's not a bad – it's a good superhero comic. It's a Mark Waid Marvel superhero comic. The art's really good. I like Ms. Marvel a lot as a character. She's sort of the main character here along with Miles Morales.
Yep.
And that part's all great. I just – you know, it's just not my Avengers.
Right. That's really what it boils down to, and it's again, you know, there's you know, we open up with a scene with Falcon and Tony Stark, and there's reference to Falcon's falling out with Cap, and it's just, again, it's that feeling of I just don't know what's going on, but it's not giving me enough clues to tell me.
Well, that was in the Captain America book.
Yeah, right. Which I didn't read, that's my own fault.
That's your fault.
But still no reference to it. Give me an editor's note, you know. But
they don't do that anymore. That's not even.
They actually do.
Occasionally, but like that went out for a while and sort of shows up occasionally. It's the exception now.
Yeah. There's actually I'm looking at an editor's note on this page in this book.
So then I just didn't.
No, not for Captain America, but for Nova reference. I mean, they do. Yeah. I see them a lot in the Marvel books.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I mean, it was good. I mean, Kubert is great. Wade is great. Like, I'm. The thing is, like, I'm not loving the Avengers world right now. So, I'm trying to figure out whether I want to keep my foot in it or not. You know, because coming off of Hickman and Secret Wars number 7 came out this week, which was awesome, by the way. But in a way that is unrelated to anything else, and just, you know, kind of like disconnected, awesome. Mm-hmm. I just thought I I'm not feeling it, you know. So yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's kind of what I wanted to know was like, if you had been like, yeah, this was great, it doesn't matter anything else, then I'd have been like, totally. But anything less than that, I'm not interested.
Right.
just because I've been so disconnected from the Avengers. And I know, Connor, actually, you said it's not my Avengers. Well, yeah, it's all new and all different. So right. That would make sense, but that doesn't necessarily mean, even if it's good, that you're all that interested in it.
Right.
Right. I mean, as soon as Steve comes back, let me know, and I'll be back. Yeah. But, you know, until then, mm-hmm. it's not something I'm totally interested in reading.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it.
I did enjoy the backup story with Ms. Marvel and Nova meeting.
Yeah.
I she's a great character, and I thought that was a great little
And story. I love Nova. So, I mean, if anything's going to pull me in, it's going to be – and I like this character and all that sort of stuff. But so – but yeah, so.
Who drew the bat? Who is that? I'm looking for the
– Mahmoud Asrar, didn't he?
Oh, man. That's great looking. Look at him. He's really come good. Such a long way.
Yeah.
And that's good Kubert, too. I like that. That's the good one. That's the one I like. Adam? I never remember which is which. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a little more scratchy.
So also coming out was all new Hawkeye number one. Josh, did you read this?
I did.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Yeah. I liked it better than the last one that we had a really hard time with.
The last all new Hawkeye number one, which was like 3 months ago.
Yeah. No, but like the last issue of Hawkeye that we talked about a lot and not in a good way.
Right.
Who's the creative team on this one?
Same one.
It's still the same. It's basically the same. It's Lemire and Perez, and it seems to have picked up that story as well too.
But 15 years later.
Yeah, but that's where this story left off. Like, it's not like this could be the next issue, you know. So
yes, it is. So keeping that in mind, but so the thing is, what I didn't like on the last one, I guess, was the weird decisions that were made. They seemed just out of nowhere and didn't seem to fit with my idea of what the characters are, but what we're doing here is we're dealing with the aftermath of that in sort of an interesting way, I guess. Like, accepting that happened and not giving that any value one way or another, this is how they deal with it. And oddly enough, like, the gist of it is that Kate is still mad at Clint about it years and years and years and years later.
Yeah.
And I know how she feels. And so in a way, I was like, yeah, he's kind of got that coming. And, like, she's mad at the guy in the way that I'm mad at the character because, you know, he was – you know, one of, if not my favorite Marvel character, and like he's, we had a fun little dalliance with Fraction.
Why is she mad at him?
Because he let, not S.H.I.E.L.D., he let AIM take away those kids.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing that they could do about it. And then the kids, you know, murdered a bunch of people because they're like, crazy guy. Like, they're like that episode of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the kids are like, except they look like Artie and Leech. But I get that. But at the same time, like, it's still, it really is a case of not my Hawkeye. Like, the thing that I really loved about him is gone. And there's other things to love about him, but it's not the same thing.
Right.
It'd be like if your favorite restaurant shut down, opened back up with the same thing, but everything in it was different, even though, like, it was the same name.
Yeah.
And even if that food's good, you're like, I like that.
I had that happen. My pizza place in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
When it changed ownership.
I remember
that. Reopened, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Not my pizza.
It was still pizza, but it was not good anymore.
Well, my biggest thing about this is less from the story standpoint and more about, I just wish Ramon Perez would be Ramon Perez and not do Ramon Perez doing David Aja. At least in the present day scenes. You know, we get a little taste of it in the flash forwards and that he's doing a different style. But like, Ramon Perez on his own can do a style that would blow your mind that you would never expect. So don't tell him to try to fit into a pigeonhole to be like, Aja. That's what drove me crazy about this.
I don't know that I see that as much.
I saw it a lot
in the layouts, I guess, a little bit, but
no, layouts and the characters and all that. I mean, like, it's Perez doing Aja in the contemporary scenes. It is.
Let Perez be Perez.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? It looks not the flash forward scenes, because that's obviously done on purpose. It looks a little unfinished.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And I don't want my art super polished.
Isn't that the style?
It's no, not, but I think it's not. I think it's cheating. I think it's
like Esad Ribic.
Yeah. No. I think it's the unfinished as a style because it's actually unfinished. Yeah.
Well, you get that a lot now. Is the non-inked pencils that are colored and you can see the pencil marks.
That's not it. Like, okay. Really.
Like, there's missing heads.
No, like really loose inks.
Yeah,
that are pretty clearly. I think they look pretty digital to me. Like, right. It's really loose, but not like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem. It doesn't seem finished. It seems rushed. It's not the guy who I. It's not the guy I fell in love with.
Not my Perez.
If you follow Perez on Instagram, he does ink digitally.
So. Yeah, and I don't know. It feels like that. It doesn't feel like. Feels like a job.
Yep.
That's what it feels like. It feels like he's doing a job. And another thing, if you follow Perez on Instagram, that guy's all over the damn place.
What the fuck, man? He's got the best life ever.
He does have the best life ever, but I wonder if it's affecting the work.
He's constantly jotting around in a scarf.
on motorcycle cross-country trips. I mean, listen, he's an amazing man. I don't think anybody can deny that. But, you know, this – I was so excited about his art when I found it, and I want to like this more than I do, and I'm trying to figure out why.
All right.
I don't.
Let's move on to the Ultimates number one from Al Ewing and Kenneth Rocafor. And this is the, I didn't know anything about this going into it other than I'll try a new Ultimates book and see what that's all about.
Right.
And it's interesting to discover that the it's a cosmic team of Marvels plus Black Panther and America Chavez. Is that Miss America?
Yeah.
From so you've got Captain Marvel, Blue Marvel, the old Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau, who goes by another name that I've already forgotten because it was dumb.
Spectrum.
And I actually found myself enjoying this.
I actually was surprisingly enjoyed this because I did not like Al Ewing's last...
Yeah, we didn't like that other book he wrote.
Yeah, The Avengers. It was the New Avengers or whatever it is. Did not like it at all. And for a moment, I was like, all right, maybe I'm just not into Al Ewing's work. But actually, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was fun.
I thought Rocafort was great. Rocafort was,
trying to find something for him, both companies, for a long time, and nothing has really been the right fit. I think this is really working.
Exactly. And him and Christian Ward have a very similar kind of chaotic style. And, you know, a lot like, you know, I think when I was really excited because Rocafort did stuff years ago at Top Cow, and it was like completely just, you know, totally out there and really kind of engaging and interesting. And then he went to DC and they totally made him tone it down.
And
I feel like he's been stuck in that land now. And I feel like this was a little closer to the Rocafort that I liked, although it's still a little constrained, but it's still a little.
But he also gets to draw crazy technology, crazy aliens. Yep. Yep. Galactus shows up at the end. And the art was wonderful, I thought.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I really liked the characters. I thought that was an interesting grouping. They're on this some sort of cosmic. Strike team that's out in the universe doing stuff, and I liked it. I thought this was fun. I'm going to continue reading the Ultimates. Strangely,
oddly, I might too. So
that's interesting because I haven't heard anything good about Al Ewing's work, so I haven't been compelled to check it out.
Yeah, check this one out, Josh. I'd be curious to hear what you think. So
all right, fair enough. I never really liked the Ultimates to begin with, but. Yeah.
So finally, while I was reading Secret Wars number 7 this week, I was I was thinking, what happened to Thors?
I thought the same thing a while ago.
And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it came out this week. And
shouldn't have read this before I read Secret Wars, by the way.
Yeah. So
wait, no, it was the other way. One of them spoiled the other. I don't know that it's mutually exclusive. I think if I had read either one first, it would have spoiled the other one.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, I think so.
Nothing you could do about it.
But the big thing is this is the book that reveals who Lady Thor is. So if
what are you talking about?
We already knew.
It was revealed in her own book, yeah.
Oh, it was? Oh, then I missed
like,
that.
Like 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, we're terrible at this.
I'm out of this. I'm out of
we're
it.
We're bad.
Yeah.
Like people at home are going, why am I listening to them?
I don't know.
You know why? Because I did not finish reading that Lady Thor series in the summer. I have the issues. I have not read them. So it was new to me. So
I'm enjoying your new status quo, which is, if I haven't read it, it just didn't happen, and I'm angry about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
God damn it. Why can't they do this? They did do that. No, I didn't read it.
Is this what it's like to hear me talk about comics? Because I'm sorry.
Yes.
Listen. It just. But that's an evidence of the disconnection I felt to what's going on in Marvel, and that you know, and like, and I love Jason Aaron's work. I love what he's done on Thor. But you know, for whatever you know, like, I admittedly, my thing, I was going through some stuff this summer, and I don't want to talk about it. But
whoa.
You know,
whoa.
So,
you know what? You should call James Robinson if you can turn that into a project.
Yeah, maybe
we could do a book on you next.
But
I'd like to see Greg Hinkle draw you.
I would read the shit out of that.
But either way, this is a nice little series, and I'm gonna miss it. This is like one of the little shining stars of the Battle World.
It was, but also it felt similar to the other ones in that it just sort of ended.
Yes, agreed. Well, it had to, you know. So,
what did it mean that the hammer flew away at the end? The Ultimates hammer.
That someone's gonna pick up the Ultimates hammer and become Ultimate
Another
Thor.
Yes,
but he was
maybe
not working.
Maybe he can can throw a bone to real Thor and give him a hammer.
I don't know.
I don't even know who real Thor is anymore.
With the arm.
He's the guy with the arm.
And the axe and the ripped up cape. God damn it. Yeah. So.
No, I'm just saying, in general, because there was Ultimate Thor. He was there. And
there was Ultimate Thor. There was Beta Ray Bill. There was
Frog Thor. Everybody knew him because he ate all the bugs.
It was Thor two times. I'm gonna go get the hammer. Get the hammer.
Oh, Ron, do the thing.
All right. So, well,
barely.
If I wanted to catch up on Lady Thor, I could go buy the trade paperback, assuming it's out. And if I could do that, I would do that on Amazon.com. And you could do that as well. And it is the best way to help support iFanboy.com. If you go to iFanboy.com/support, you can find a link to shop at Amazon. And hey, listen, we're well into November. Guess what's coming? Guess what's just around the corner? The holidays.
Hey, yeah.
So you're going to want to do your Christmas shopping. You got Black Friday coming up. You got Cyber Monday coming up. You got the holidays coming up. You got Kwanzaa. You got Hanukkah. You got Christmas. You got all the stuff. So you want to get all the good presents at Amazon and go to ifanboy.com/support and use our link to go to Amazon and help us get a little piece of the action. We appreciate everyone who does that. Also, if you want to help us directly, you can sign up for a recurring membership for $3 a month or $30 a year. You can also do that at ifanboy.com/support. And if you don't want a recurring membership and you just want to give us a one-time donation, you can do that as well. And there's a link there to do that via PayPal. And we recently got a couple of direct donations, and we want to thank everybody who did submit that. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. And as always, we thank you for your support, and we'll keep the lights on. So
they're gonna ask. They'd like you to read the books, though.
Yeah, you went from like Bartles and James.
Listen, I've got a lot of catching up to do. I know.
He was out of the industry for a while.
I was on Walkabout.
I stopped watching Grey's Anatomy 3 years ago, and I don't know who these people are and what's going on. What the hell? Not my Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, I actually feel the same way when I see the promos. Anyway. Superman American Alien came out this week. Superman American Alien number one, written by Ron's buddy Max Landis.
The hatred of this book from other people that I really don't have any context for still drove me away.
Oh, is this the Max Landis book?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't read it. I gotta go back and read it then.
This was super great. Nick Jagoda on art. And what this is a 7-issue miniseries that's examining different points along the life of Superman. And this one is about when he's a kid. And he's just learning that he can fly and having all these problems. He just floats. And so this is going to be 7 issues with different artists like Jock and Jay Lee and Tommy Lee Edwards, Nick Jagoda, Francis Manapal, Ryan Sook, a bunch of people like that doing artwork. And this was great. I don't know what people's problems were other than it's a slightly different look on these characters. The parents are younger. He's given them some sort of realistic problems. It takes place in the 80s. It takes place in the early 80s. They go to the movies to see E.T. and Pete Ross has a mullet. But I thought this was fun. And I'm really curious to know which Superman this is, actually.
Well, I'm downloading it based on your...
The Nick Jagoda stuff's really great, too.
Well, all right, then.
And there's also a final page where you see sort of a... scrap room with articles taped up on the wall and old letters, and you sort of poke around there and you can piece together some things going on at the family and the fact that Jonathan was a hippie in the 60s.
That makes sense. I believe that.
It's not cool to like this book, I don't think.
I don't really give a fuck.
I love you.
All right. I don't even know who's complaining about it, but I don't really care.
Darwin Cook is the king. That's all I have to say about Twilight Children number two.
I have two notes on Twilight Children. One is... I thought, wow, some more Darwin art. I'm getting new Darwin art every month.
Yep.
This is amazing. And two, I don't know what's going on at all.
Well, welcome to a Gilbert Hernandez story.
I have no idea what's going on.
Well, that's concerning, yeah. As that has been the thing that I think has turned Connor and I off from it in the past. Yes. Right. I do not feel as lost. That's not a thing that's...
I had no problem with issue one. Issue two threw me a lot of curveballs.
I'm sort of going with it all will be revealed sort of thing. What I thought was interesting in general is that while this is Darwin Cook art, it doesn't feel like any Darwin Cook story I've ever read before, so I'm rolling on that.
Right, yeah, and that's what I think is special about it, is that it's Darwin, the Darwin-Gilbert combination is unlike anything we've seen before. And the thing is, I've read Gilbert Hernandez stories before, and this is kind of par for the course. He set it up, great setup, introducing the characters, and now you start getting curveballs. You don't quite know what's going on. Shocking things happen. Big bursts of light grab people and they disappear and, wait for the next issue. So,
oh, I'm not turned
blind.
Off.
I'm not just, blind.
No. I just finished it going, what?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
But it's early, so that's fine. Yeah. Batman and Robin Eternal number 6. I just wanted to mention that, and I know people are probably sick of hearing about this book, but I'm actually enjoying it more and more with each issue. And I really am costumes aside, really enjoying mostly the flashback to the original adventure with, you know, Dick Grayson as Robin and Batman. And I actually was thinking that it's really rare to, you know, we've talked about this over the years on the podcast going way back to the beginning. It's really rare to get a Batman and Robin story. I know they had a Batman and Robin book, but for years and years and years, going way back to the beginning of Tim Drake, when Robin had his own book, they basically had him in that book and you never really hung out with Batman in it.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Yep.
So, you know, I'm reading this Batman and Robin story. I'm like, hey, this is, I forgot what this is like. Like, this is, you know, granted, I don't really read Batman and Robin anymore, but that's a different Robin I'm not interested in. But I forgot what it's like to read a fun story featuring Batman and Robin, which is the title of this book. But right. I'm enjoying it.
Cool. And then finally, to round out the new Marvel books, All New Wolverine number one came out. And I this is featuring not Wolverine, but actually X-23.
Right. I didn't read it.
Yeah, and at first I was, you know, adamant about not, but I was like, let me give it a shot. Actually, really good.
Who's a creative team?
I like that. That's a good character. She's been used really well in the recent years.
Yeah, no, and recently she's gotten a lot better. Written by Tom Taylor, who, I'll be honest, I don't know who that is.
We've read books by him before. I can't think of what they were, but we have.
Yeah.
We made a lot of jokes because he had the same character name as the character in The Unwritten.
Oh, right. Okay. I vaguely recall that. Yeah. But art by David Lopez, who did remember he did the old Hawkeye Mockingbird thing that Jim McCann wrote?
Yes.
But the I don't know if it's the Nathan Fairbairn coloring him, or it says David Lopez and David Navarro wrote on art. I don't know if it's the inking, but it's got a heavier line this time. And I actually, the art looks really, really good. And there's a little cameo by Angel, by Warren, and young Angel from All New X-Men. And it's just like, this is a really good, it was a solid issue. I'm going to stick with it. So
he wrote that Crazy Injustice series.
Right.
Yeah, that was it.
I remember that. Okay, cool. Yeah, I dig it. So I would check this out. It was it got my thumbs up. So,
hey, War Corner time.
All right.
It feels like there's a lot more War comics out, so we're having this War Corner segment way more than we used to. I figured we'd start with the one Josh didn't read and then get to the one he did read. War Stories.
I feel like you just keep putting these on here to bug me.
That's I'll be honest. It's like 50% of the reason why.
War
Stories 14, Garth Ennis's current story, it is the best one of this particular Avatar run. It's part two of the Tokyo story. I'm trying to get the book up on the iPad here to read the title. But it's basically the first issue was three replacement pilots in Okinawa. Flying missions, Tokyo Club, and you know, one of them died in issue one, another one dies in issue two, and this is probably the most compelling and interesting arc he's had so far, this particular Avatar run. Really great storytelling. You know, fighter pilots in World War II are always interesting because, you know, those planes went down a lot, and they have a zest for life because they don't think they're going to make it, and it's a lot of interesting details like how hard it is to fly these missions hundreds of miles from these little islands to Japan. And in this issue, they encounter a giant storm, which is a problem for these planes.
Yeah, I remember watching, what did I watch? It was called Pearl Harbor.
It was
a movie about World War II fighter pilots. And yes. they do a mission at the end where they've got to fly.
Matt Damon's friend was in it.
Yeah. I think so. It was a good movie.
Hey, is Paul still available?
Oh, actually, you know what? This is Iwo Jima. But here's an interesting. Actually, the reason why I wanted to mention this, I just remembered it now, is that there's a really great scene in the middle, and this was a total classic Garth Ennis scene in which they're all having dinner, and the guy representing the Marines is at the table, and he basically just, you know, asked them if it was worth it, if all the people that died taking Iwo Jima was worth, you know, all of his friends in the Marines who took Iwo Jima, it was worth their death to have this to take this island because they could have flown the same missions from the islands they already had, and it was a really great sort of. Monologue / debate between the Marine and the pilots about the cost of war. And that was sort of right up Garth Ennis' alley.
Cool.
Good stuff. And then I moved Rebels into the War Corner because I figured it's a book about the Revolutionary War.
It is. I agree with that move.
So there you go. Talk about Rebels.
Well, what we got this time was a sort of interesting two-part. He's just doing an anthology where he's skipping around within the issue itself.
First part is about a woman who's printing up seditious flyers in the 1760s, so prior to the sort of start of hostilities about the Stamp Act, and she's captured because they recognize a like a defect in the print that he recognizes from another flyer. So we found out who printed the other flyer, and then they arrested her, and then she meets with Benjamin Franklin's sister in the lady prison. Yes. End of, and there's the basically a talk of like, it'd be really nice if we women mattered.
That was a really devastating conversation. Yes,
it was. It was, and you know, she had all sorts to add, and I love the connection. I don't know how true of a story this is or not. I'm guessing not, but maybe based in something. But you know, Ben Franklin's sister is a real person, and we talk about him a lot more than her. And then the second, I'm trying to jog my memory what the second was. It was our Seth. Seth is definitely the guy from the first arc, right?
I'd have to look it up.
He is in – so what happened was Washington, they laid siege on Boston for a really long time, and after a long time, they won. Then they went down
explaining the Revolutionary War?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened.
Step by step.
This was what it was. They laid – like Boston – the UK was you know, the British were – laid up in Boston, and they laid siege to him for a really long time. And then one night they erected all these ramparts, and they woke up in the morning like they had all these guns facing down on them from Dorchester Heights, and that forced the British to finally leave. And then they scooted down south and they took over New York, which was a loyalist stronghold. And eventually the British showed up and drove them all out, and they lost Manhattan and Brooklyn and all that. And then they didn't win anything for years. I mean, it's a wonder that the war went the way it did. Anyway, so this is a story that
you're crossing into some light. Like, it's a wonder though. No. Like it's
fascinating. I know. I love like the heroic story of the war is like it was loss after defeat. After like no, there's no chance this should have happened. Yeah. But what we have here is a story of Seth Abbott in Manhattan, and he's like on a basically he's like a sniper. He's in like a building, and he's got a spotter.
Yeah, Seth was in the first story. He was. Yeah, that's him.
So he's got a spotter. And he's talking to him, and the guy's like, "You don't like me very much because I'm black, or because I was a slave." And he's like, "That's not it." And he notices that there's stitching in his jacket from where there was a patch, and he uses it to out him as a spy or as a British loyalist, or basically. But then the guy says, "You know, you're promising freedom from this. You don't even know, you know, you don't even know what that means to me." And he's like, "Well, we're all slaves." And he's like, "Oh, shut up." You know, basically, and it's true. Like it's a further back look of we tell this story about the revolution and the Declaration of Independence and freedom. And, you know, it means different things to different people depending on who you are. And it was a really nice just touch of perspective, I guess. There wasn't really a bad guy in this scene.
I hope he's not – well, he's a spy. Of course he's a bad guy. I really hope he's not cramming these in because, you know, they're only doing a certain number. Like I would have liked each one of these stories to get a full issue.
Well –
I don't think that's happened. Star Wars Corner.
So Star Wars Corner, you got Darth Vader number 12. And remember when Darth Vader started and we were talking how great Salvador LaRocca was and how impressive the art was and all that sort of stuff? I believe the monthly schedule might have taken its toll because there's a real wonky stormtrooper in the beginning of this. It's like a real thin, gangly stormtrooper. It's like, oh, okay, he's getting tired. But that said, this had an awesome moment where Vader takes out a Y-Wing with his lightsaber from the ground, the Y-Wing that's taking off, and he chucks the lightsaber and it cuts the thing off. That was kind of awesome. But yeah, and this kind of, I believe this looks like this wraps up this 12 issue, and then this moves into Vader Down, which is, I guess, the crossover event.
Vader Down!
But yeah. But then the other thing I wanted to mention, aside from the monthly issues, Chewbacca number 3 also came out, and that was awesome. But I saw that Marvel, I guess they've been re-releasing the old Star Wars stuff, but this week they released the hardcover version of the old mid-80s, 1983 adaptation of Return of the Jedi, that's written by Archie Goodwin with art by Al Williamson. Mm-hmm. And this, I got to go back and try to figure out the timeline, but I know I've always said that G.I. Joe number, whatever the G.I. Joe issue, Connor, what issue is that? With the photos and the arrow on the
26?
Cover. Yeah. I've always said that was like my first comic book, but this might be my first like graphic novel. I got in 1984 for Valentine's Day. My parents used to give us presents for Valentine's Day, like a little thing. And I got the little paperback collected edition of all these issues that tells the story of Return of the Jedi, and I read that book until the pages fell out.
Right.
And so it was great to see this and go down memory lane again and be like, oh my God, I totally remember this. And it's Al Williamson art and it's amazing. So if you're a Star Wars fan and you never got, if you're too young, you never got to see this stuff, it's great to see Marvel putting it back into print. And you know, it's available digitally, it's available in print, and this is one of my favorites of all time. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Well, now I know why I thought, are we talking about the movie?
No.
Oh, I just want to talk about Return of the Jedi for a while, guys.
Yeah. Is that all right? No, but yeah,
they
honestly
recolored this, right?
I'm sorry?
They definitely recolored this, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it looks like Soto Color recolored it. So it is recolored. But if you don't know the greatness of Al Williamson, this is a great place to kind of check it out because it is amazing. So, it is recolored. Looks a little more vibrant. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, those are the books we're going to talk about this week. GoodIFanboy.com. Find the post for this show, and you can talk about these books or other books you read. A lot of books came out this week, so if we didn't get a chance to talk about them all. So if you want to talk about more things, they can be done at ifanboy.com. Let's do some email. We'll try to get a couple of these in. We'll start with Aaron. Keeping the Star Wars train rolling. Aaron says, it's common knowledge you guys don't like the Star Wars prequels. What specifically do you hate, and is there any way to re-edit the movie to make them better? I think if they removed the scenes with the midichlorians, the rocket boosters on R2, and the idea that Anakin is going to bring balance to the Force, it would at least improve things. It could at least be watchable.
Listen, if you just take out the things I don't like.
Very specific things.
Well,
no.
No.
I think I think it's important to say that. I mean, I know you guys. I kind of like as the years go on. I kind of appreciate the prequels.
Jesus Christ, where's Paul?
But not because they're good, just because of how bad they are.
No, there's no such thing. Also, either like Aaron, something or don't.
Yeah. Aaron, go listen to our special edition podcast we did on the re-release of The Phantom Menace in 3D, and that's basically where we exercise all those demons for good.
Yeah.
Here are all the problems we had, and there's no way to make these movies better.
I mean, there's some people who believe them. I mean, if you haven't heard of Aaron, and anybody else, if you haven't heard of The Machete Order, which is a fan theory on how to watch all the movies, and like it's like you watch, you know, you watch Star Wars, then you watch Empire, and then you go back and watch, you know, and watch part of Episode 2 and all of Episode 3 or whatever the thing is. There's some people who say that is good. I don't agree. I mean, I think that's interesting, but I chalk that up with crazy fan theories that I don't subscribe to. So yeah,
a couple of points here.
Yeah,
first of all, fuck fan theories.
Yes.
Just my least favorite thing on the internet. B, taking out a couple of little things that aren't annoying have nothing to do with it.
Right.
If you don't like the movie because of rocket boosters and R2-D2, you have problems. Like that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's about a story. It's about compelling characters. It's about good acting. The only thing I can say about those movies that I liked is Obi-Wan Kenobi. I really like Ewan McGregor in that role.
Agreed.
I really like the design of Episode 1 in particular. I think it's a great looking movie. A lot of the designs I thought were wonderful. They're boring. That's what the problem is. Like Episode 1's boring.
Yeah.
It's long and it's not compelling. You don't know why anyone's doing anything or care, even if you do. And then the other two are embarrassing.
Yeah. Episode two is the worst. Yes, agreed.
I could take my kid to go see his friend, you know, to play over at his house, and the parents were like, oh, they've been watching Star Wars a lot, and I was like, oh, that's good. And then they put on Episode 3, and I was just watching it going, oh, they think I like this, and that it was embarrassing, and I'm also like, I'm not even going to sit here and say it's bad. But it's not any of the things that we liked about the early ones. Maybe you can never recapture that. I'm totally cool with that. I don't ever need to recapture that because it already exists.
Yeah. I mean, we've had long, long conversations about what's wrong with these and what went wrong. And I personally believe that the lack of surrounding yourself with people just saying yes does not give you the best product.
And also, they seem to exist solely to wink at things that already happened and set those things up. And, well, no, I don't necessarily hate it, but it seemed like that was the entire purpose, and it changed a lot. Yeah. Of the a lot of the mystique of those first movies is gone because we've tried to explain their origin.
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what the actual result of the prequels did that ruined the original trilogy for me is that I have zero fear of Darth Vader as a villain anymore.
Mm.
Because even, you know, and as menacing and mysterious and whatever that it was in the original trilogy, I now know he is inside of that is a whiny baby. And then when you go and back and watch Jedi or watch Empire, any line Vader says is like, you're just a whiny baby. And it has no gravitas anymore. It has no value to me anymore. So, yeah. So fuck the prequels. They ruin the movies.
Wow. All right.
You are all over the place.
Yeah. Are you off your meds?
I'm just saying. But no, I mean, that did a lot to ruin that character for me.
See, I just exercised the prequels from my mind and I'm back to my feeling with the originals. Like I watch them. I have no problem recapturing all that stuff. It's great, but fuck those movies. Quick question.
Yeah, the other ones don't bother me. We're beyond the looking glass with the old movies. Like you're not going to change that.
Yeah.
Like they are what they are.
Right. I still love it.
Great.
Corin from Birmingham, UK says, "I've got a question for the show that I've been thinking about hard for a long time, 2.5 years to be exact, and that's some serious thinking."
Wow, that's some serious thinking.
It's a mediocre, it's mid-range thinking.
Corin says, "I had a dream where I went to the luxury iFanboy offices in Manhattan to ask if I could get engaged to my girlfriend. Josh said I should. Ron said I should wait a bit longer to see how things go, and Connor said that I shouldn't and should break up with her. In Affairs of the Heart, who has had the most success, and should I have listened to my dream? Did I make a horrendous mistake?" We can't answer this question.
Why are we even reading this question?
Basically, to hear what you'd say in reaction to it. And I think we can chalk that up as a win.
I don't even know. There's no way to answer this question.
There's no way to answer this.
Who has had the most success?
Well, how do you define success?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? And that is a subjective answer.
Right.
It's all from a certain point of view.
From time to time. Did I make a horrendous... Well, I've been married for a decade.
But what is the mistake that he made?
I said he should. He thinks... So in his dream...
We don't know if he got engaged or not, so we don't know if he made a mistake.
Well...
There's a lot of information missing.
I think we can make the leap there, though. So I mean, it depends on her, doesn't it? Or him. Like, you made a mistake if you hate each other. But maybe you don't hate each other yet.
Right.
Maybe you will hate each other. That can happen.
So then Ron was correct. Oh, boy.
But Connor wants him to stay single.
Which I feel like
but
is true.
I didn't say it.
I feel, but although, like Corin, I don't know how Corin knew, but he zoomed in right there.
Yeah, but that's old Connor.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Connor, today Connor's different Connor. But right. Connor wouldn't trade past Connor.
Oh.
Past Connor had a lot of fun. And had past Josh been single, which he pretty much wasn't, he probably wouldn't have had any fun. he would have just been angry about things. He was anyway.
Still is.
Still is.
No, I'm just tired. It's different.
But did he
don't have kids?
Definitely don't do that. Come
don't
on.
Do that. You know what I looked like 5 years ago? I did. I looked a lot more than 5 years younger.
Wait, you have kids?
So email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. If you call our voicemail line, keep it around 30 seconds. And let's do a couple of plugs and announcements. Ron.
Yes. So if you haven't heard, we've launched another podcast that's been going on for about 2 months now. We really want to thank everybody who's checked it out and has been enjoying it. Many of you have been. Check out, it's called Goodfellas Minute. You can go to goodfellasminute.com where we are analyzing the Martin Scorsese picture 1 minute at a time. We've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of great guests on the show. There's some comics folks that have been on and are coming on, and we're really excited. So please check that out. Subscribe. Tell your friends. It's going on until April, so get on it while you can.
The end of this week sees the release of Jessica Jones, the second Marvel series from Netflix. And you know we did a podcast on Daredevil, the first one last year. We are going to do a Jessica Jones show. Don't know when. It's coming
right
out
around
the worst
Thanksgiving.
Possible
it's,
time.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough timing.
It's coming out right before Thanksgiving, and then the holidays
come. Did
they
not check with us on the release date?
I told Loeb. I said, Loeb, don't do it by the holiday.
Jeff Haloeb here on the iFanboy show coming at you.
honestly, we have the rest of the year scheduled super tightly. I don't know if this is going to even come out this year. It might come out next year.
No, well, I think between you and me, and Josh maybe not, but you and me, we can probably get it done.
I'm out.
So there you go.
Maybe early December. I'm going to say this. It'll come out either early December or early January.
Yeah. All right. That's fair.
In the meantime, head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show, talk about this week's books. You can find a lot of other podcasts. You can find our Daredevil podcast if you've never heard that one. You can find our Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace 3D podcast, which is really just a lot of catharsis in that podcast. So that's actually a really fun one. I listened to it not that long ago. It was pretty funny. Follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. Follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, at Ron XO.
Star Wars
Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, Man and X-Man.
I'm so glad they stopped doing those 3D versions. That was the best thing from the Disney acquisition. Like, they're like, the ink wasn't dry, and they're like, well, cancel those.
It's a good call.
I also forgot that I saw Episode 1 in 3D, by the way, Connor.
It took nothing away from the movie. It was just that movie.
Wizard!
the only thing I remember from that viewing was A, being bored, and B, hey, look, it's Dominic West. That's the only thing I remember from that.
Yep.
All right, yeah.
My takeaway. So if you like our show, maybe not this one. Maybe this isn't your test case. But if you'd like to help us out, you can leave a review in iTunes, or you can pass links around to the show, or if people say, hey, you know any comics podcast? You can be like, well, I know the best one, and this is it. You know, whatever you want to do, that's your deal. So tell other people about it and help us spread the word about it. And we thank those of you who do, and we appreciate that because you are pretty much our advertising budget. So
I mostly want people to assign the proper blame. So when you go on Twitter and say, iFanboy doesn't actually read the comics, no, it's Ron.
Yeah, let's be specific.
That's Ron a good point. Ron doesn't read the comics he complains about. So
listen, this has been a week, all right? This has been a week.
But not just that. Like, this is a lifelong, not lifelong. This is like throughout the history of the show.
Yes, yeah.
The three of us, who are three different people with three different opinions and takes on things, are always like, they didn't like it.
Yeah, we are not a hive mind.
No, unless we're talking about Airboy.
Right.
And if you don't like Airboy, you're pretty much SOL for this one.
Yeah.
Sorry. It was very good.
Yeah, it was great.
That's all I have.
All right.
All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. Bye. Why are you always like this? If I'm having fun, then it's breaking your heart. Besides, you said I could have it.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.